My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
What happened to the markets and home prices plunging? What happened in the economy supposedly slowing to a halt? Everyone expected to see this in 2022 and 2023 when the Fed started raising rates at the fastest rate in history. And more importantly, of course, now people are asking themselves, what should we be expecting in 2024? What should we be expecting for our money, for our investments, our businesses, and even more? Especially considering 2024 is going to be extremely volatile and wild because of three critical events that are shaping what's coming this year. Those three events, the three critical events that I'm talking about are: one, debt, massive amounts of debt and huge government deficits all around the world, every country, and in the face of massive inflation. How do they handle debt, the deficits, while they're trying to fight inflation, a double-edged war at the same time? Two, the second critical event is we are in an election year. So, in an election year, that is going to drive the politics, the finances, the fiscal, the monetary, and all of that. What will that do to the markets? And then three, the third critical event that everybody's watching and we should keep our eye on this is war, more war, and more war. If you're just tuning in, welcome to the Mark Moss Show. Each week we dive into the intricate world of politics, finance, and technology, looking at the intersection of those three things. And today, I'm going to explain what I think comes next for our money, for our investments, our businesses, and of course, how to position ourselves and what to watch for as things change. All right. Now, like I said, this is going to be a volatile year. It's going to be a wild year. And so we have to be paying attention. This is certainly not a year to be sitting back and just see how things go. Now, just real quick, on my main YouTube channel, I've been putting out videos like this for a long time. I don't typically talk about these things on the podcast, but just so you know, back in, let's see, now September of 2022, I made a video saying the central banks were going to be forced into pivoting, and I gave the playbook for that. Then in also another video in September 22, I said the real data from the Fed doesn't want you to see. They hope you don't notice. And I was saying that they were starting to pivot and that they were going to push markets higher. Then the next month, October, I said, this is how the Fed is secretly patching the cracks. And I showed how they were starting to inject money while saying they were still tightening, even they weren't. Now, in 2022 and 23, everyone was calling for the crash of the market. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I'm just giving you a little bit of track record here. Another one in October 22, I said that there's no market crash coming and here's why. And I broke it down. Another one in October of 22, I said, there's no financial crisis coming, no global financial crisis coming. I said, November, this is when the central banks are going to pivot. January of 23, I said, breaking data shows the Fed pivot is here. Of course, if you would have bought in anything, Bitcoin, S&P 500 in January of 2023 did really, really well. In January 23, I said, the new data tells us it's time to buy. So we should start buying. February, Federal Reserve is fighting the U.S. government. I explained how this war between deficits, deficit spending, and inflation was between the Fed and the Treasury, and how, of course, the Treasury was going to win out, which is, of course, what we saw. I made a video in February saying my prediction for the global financial markets. So this is my second prediction video for now for 2024. I made another video about in June saying, watch out, because the debt ceiling is going to unleash a huge amount of money. In the thumbnail, it said huge opportunity ahead. August, I made a video, why aren't the markets crashing? And it was sort of like a quarterly report and what I was looking at. Everyone was dumbfounded. How come the markets weren't crashing? We were told that real estate was supposed to plunge and the recession and all these things. And I made a video explaining that. August, I said, I made a video called Bear Market Canceled. New data reveals why the bear market was canceled. In September of last year, central banks give in. Meaning they gave in, they're throwing in the towel, they're done with quantitative tightening, and do this now. I gave actions on that. November of 23, I said the Federal Reserve is fighting the U.S. government. So this is sort of back to the fight between the Fed and the government, between the monetary and the fiscal policy, between inflation or the government continuing to spend debt. November of 23, I said, warning, this time is different. And I explained why the data and things are different this time. I know, and I know you've heard that before, right? Things are different. No, they are always the same. Well, no, they're actually different. The way that the central banks, not just the Fed, all the central banks around the world interact in the markets today is different. And I said, warning, this time is different. And I talked about how really it changed in 2008 was where the big shift happened, but it's only continued to escalate since then. And anyway, that's a couple of the track record things I have. 5 weeks ago, early December, I said that the Bitcoin ETF would probably be a buy the rumor, sell the news event. And it would probably see some price drop after that. Anyway, I could go on. I don't want to sit here and continue to toot my own horn, but I've done pretty well with these predictions so far. And let's see if I can keep this going. All right. But like I said, this year is looking to be way more volatile, way more wild than any year we've seen because of these three critical events. Of course, the debt, the deficits, and inflation. Two, the election year, and three, like I said, war, more war, more war. But let's just talk back through 2023 for a minute before we keep going on that. By the way, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. In 2023, there was lots of calls for recession. Everybody was calling for recession. The Fed had just gone on the fastest rate hiking cycle we've seen in history. We've been in this massive inflationary environment, lots of monetary easing. The interest rates were basically at zero. So when the price of money is cheap, people buy more of it. And so we'd seen massive amounts of liquidity increasing. Interest rates were at zero. And then the Fed just hit the brakes, right? Pulled the e-brake, if you will, and raised the rates at the fastest rate in history. Now, everybody said, well, this is going to cause a recession. It's gonna crash. And as a matter of fact, we saw The Economist, the magazine a lot of people turn to as an authority figure, wrote an article titled Why a Global Recession is Inevitable in 2023. There's betting markets that I like to follow where people are basically wagering on where events will turn out, sort of like you can wager on a football game. There's also markets where you can wager on what you think the Fed will do with rate hikes or what you think the odds of a recession will be, all types of things like that. And odds got as high as 80% chance that we would have a recession in 2023. The consensus all across the U.S. Were just way too negative. It got as high as 80%, but it remained at about a 65% chance for most of the year. So if you fell into this, you know, you were in the consensus. Don't, you know, whatever, no worries. Most of the headlines that you were seeing online, on YouTube, on social media, et cetera, were calling for this. Part of the reason why is because it's very sensational. When you show a thumbnail with fire and you have your face open in a shock look and you talk about how the market's going to crash by 80%, people want to watch that. But it just never materialized. The economy never came close to, you know, never came close to crashing. The labor market went from strength to even more strength. All right, so that's what happened in 2023. The S&P 500 finished the year up big. Bitcoin finished the year up big. And now here we are, just entered 2024, and a lot of those people who bet on pessimism in 2023 are doubling down for 2024. Right now, the markets are showing that there's a 50% chance of recession this year in 2024. And I think overall, like I said, those who bet on it want to double down. I think there remains a very strong reluctance to recognize any type of a soft landing. People are just so stuck in their opinions that they don't want to change their opinions, even in the light of new data. And of course, that's always a problem. You know, what is it? Strong convictions that are loosely held, right? We need to be strong in our convictions, but we have to be willing to change our mind when new information comes out. And I think a lot of people are just stuck in their ways. We see skeptics such as Larry Summers, you know, he's one of the big mouthpieces out there. He said it would take 5 years of 6% unemployment to bring inflation back down and to have a soft landing. He said that soft landing was at odds with theory and empirical evidence. But in fact, here we are. Over a year and a half into this soft landing, we had the soft landing, inflation has fallen 6 percentage points. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, is projecting, forecasting no recession until through 2030. So what is going to happen in 2024? We're going to talk about that. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about 2023 recession and crash that didn't happen and what I predict will happen in 2024 and what you should be doing about it. I'll be back with more on that in a minute. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about what happened with the recession and the market crash and the housing market crash in 2023 that never happened. And more specifically, what I expect to happen in 2024. Now, we talked about it sort of in the economy side, but what about the market? So we have sort of the economy, which is businesses, recession, unemployment. Then we have the market. So then we're talking, you know, stocks, equities, commodities, real estate, Bitcoin, things like that. The one thing that I'll say as we dive into this is I like to use this Mark Twain quote. I've been using it quite a bit lately in light of this. And the Mark Twain quote was that it's not the things that you don't know that get you in trouble. It's the things that you know absolutely for certain. You see, when the Fed started raising rates at the fastest rate in history, everybody was certain that it would crash the market. They were certain. They knew it. When the Fed raises the rates, what we call the risk-free rate, because the Fed is buying treasuries technically risk-free, if you can call it that. But when they raise the risk-free rate, then stocks have to reprice lower. They have to. They have to, they have to, they have to. When the mortgage rates go from 2.5% to 8%, home prices have to come down. They have to, they have to, they have to. This was the consensus. It was, they knew for certain. Look, the average price of the home went from $1,700 a month to now $3,500. Nobody can afford that. That means the home prices have to come down. They have to, they have to, they have to. It was what they knew for certain that got them in trouble. But now, in hindsight, we can see that it wasn't so. It didn't have to be that way because, of course, stocks didn't get repriced lower. Home prices didn't crash. None of those things happened. So I've been using that quote quite a bit. Now, I do want to let you know that I'm going to be giving you sort of my predictions for 2024 with these three critical events. And I have a whole presentation with all the charts, the graphs, the slides, et cetera. If you want to check that out, go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. Again, that's go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. If you want to see the charts, the graphs, the slides, and specifically if you want to see the assets and the asset categories and assets I'm buying and how I'm building my portfolio for 24, and even more specifically, the exact indicators that I'm watching in case things change, go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024 and you can watch that, download it, get all of that. But let's talk about these three critical events that I think are going to shape 2024, and more importantly, what they're going to do to the markets. And again, we're looking at debt and inflation and deficit spending. So let's just talk about that for a minute. So we're going to talk about that, then we'll talk about the war and more wars, and then we'll talk about election years. So the first thing is we have debt, deficit spending, and inflation. Now, there's those are all sort of three sides to this coin that we have to think about. And specifically, we think about the debt and the deficit spending. So those two are sort of together, right? So the government is spending more money than they bring in, surprise, surprise. And not just the U.S. government, also all the European governments and the Canadian government and the Chinese government and every other country in the world. As a matter of fact, as bad as the U.S. is, Canada is way worse. Way worse. China is even way worse than that. And most of the European countries, specifically the pigs in the south, Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain, they're even way worse. So the U.S. is still what we call the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry, if you will. However, they have massive amounts of deficit spending. So the government is spending more money than they bring in. As a matter of fact, the United States has never had this amount of deficit spending, this amount of increased debt in a non-war type environment. Now, I suppose you could argue that we're in this perpetual state of war, which I guess we are. We've been in the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on obesity. We've had the war on COVID. And now, of course, we have the Ukraine war. We got the, you know, whatever's going on in the Middle East, potential war happening in China, Taiwan. And so we have these wars, but and maybe that's driving the deficit spending. It's certainly part of it. But what happened is, you know, we spent all this through the pandemic. And as a matter of fact, the government spending went up by about 50%. So from 2019, pre-pandemic, whenever you're looking at financial data, it's important to look at pre-pandemic data because that pandemic created such an anomaly. And a lot of what you see is like oil prices are crashing, home prices are crashing. A lot of it's just returning back to, you know, this pre sort of pandemic bubble, if you will. However, what we can see is that the government, the amount of money that the U.S. government spends went up by about 50% from about $4.5 trillion to about $6.8 trillion. But after the pandemic was over and they didn't have to send stimmy checks out to people anymore, the government still continued to spend that amount of money. As a matter of fact, through all these debt ceiling debates, they never wanted to allow even $1 decrease in the amount of spending. All of the arguments are the rate of increases moving forward. Do we want to slow down the increases? None of it is talking about spending less. So we're continuing to spend that amount of money. Now, the thing is with that is that the Fed was trying to fight inflation. And by trying to fight inflation, they were trying to make you and I, average people, broke. if we were broke, we would buy less gasoline, buy less food, we would buy less house, we would travel less. And if you and I were broke and we spent less money, then supply and demand would bring the prices down. If my stocks went down in value, I would feel broke. I wouldn't spend as much money. If my home value went down, I would feel broke. I wouldn't spend as much money. The problem was the Fed could not make you and I broke enough to offset the money that the government, the Treasury, was spending. It's what we call fiscal dominance. The Fed is running monetary policy. The Treasury is running fiscal policy, as we call fiscal dominance. They are driving it. Right. So now we have this tug of war. Like I kind of rattled off some of these videos I talked about in the past, where the Fed is fighting the government. The Fed wants to make you broke, but the government won't stop spending. So that's what's been happening. Now we also have the war, and now we have potentially more wars, and that means even more spending. As a matter of fact, most of the consensus seems to be that the Ukraine war is sort of over at this point. The U.S. is basically sort of withdrawn their support for it. None of the American people have an appetite to continue to send money over there. And it looks like the funding has basically dried up. Last I saw, I think in the last day or two, Zelensky is now wanting to have peace talks with Russia. However, the U.S. political elite still don't want to give up on that, and they're still trying to bury more funding in for Ukraine on that. In the meantime, we have this whole situation going on over in the Middle East with all of our Navy, our aircraft carriers, etc., and massive amounts of spending. So again, the government spending more money, more debt, more deficit, and that's what's driving thing. And when the And so that's sort of this play, this war, if you will. Now, will the war get bigger, and will that cause more deficit spending, or will the war shrink down? So that's one of the predictions we're going to get to. And then we also have in the election year. So we're in an election year right now. I think only one incumbent president, a returning president running for re-election, has ever won in a recession. So if the Democratic Party wants to win, they will do everything in their power, which is a lot, to make sure there is no recession. But there could also be a lot of turbulence with this election. Ray Dalio was on TV this week saying this would be the most important election of our life. Everyone's saying it's the most important election of our life. And so what will that do? I'm going to come back with my predictions on these events, what they'll do with the economy, and what they'll do with the markets, and of course, how we should protect ourselves. If you want to see the whole slide presentation where I have the charts, the graphs, I'll show you my portfolio, show you the assets I'm buying, show you what I think, what I'm doing, and what I'm watching, go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. Again, go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. 2024. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, I'm going to give you my predictions for this year, what you can expect. I'll be back with that in a minute. Do not go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of Bitcoin. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We are talking about my predictions for 2024. What's going to happen in the economy? Recession, no recession? What's going to happen in the markets with your stocks, your equities, your assets, and what you should be doing about it? Of course, we're looking at it through the light of these three critical events, and I am talking about critical event number one, massive amounts of debt, deficit spending, and the fight over inflation. Number two, war, more war, and wars after that. And number three is in an election year. All right, so let's sort of get down into this nitty gritty here. And let's talk about what I think is happening here. All right, so first of all, a couple things. Debt, inflation, and deficit spending. At this rate, I'll ask you a question rhetorically, and I'll answer it for you. Do you think that governments will wake up tomorrow and decide, we're spending way too much money, let's just fire a bunch of people, shut all these programs down, and stop spending? What's the odds of that happening? In my opinion, it's basically, I don't want to say zero, nothing's impossible, but it's very highly improbable at this point. There's probably less than a fraction of a point that that happens at this point. At some point, you know, you get to Argentina's level, and what we can see happening there with Milei, he is cutting spending because they're forced to. We've seen in Greece, they go bankrupt, they're forced into some austerity. The United States is a long way from that, so I don't see the deficit spending slowing down. Now, I predict that the government will continue to spend. I predict that the United States will add at least $3 trillion to the federal debt this year. Now, let's just put that into perspective. From the founding of the United States until, I think, the first 195 years it took to get $1 trillion worth of debt. So 195 years of the country. Now, let's just say that money back then was a lot different than it is today. So it would be even more. But it took 195 years to get to $1 trillion of debt. Then I think it took about 10 years to get the next trillion. I'm predicting that we get at least $3 trillion of debt. Now, if we get a recession or the war breaks out, it's going to get even higher. So I'll get to where those predictions are next. And I guess I sort of already answered that. But I think the government keeps spending. I think deficit spending keeps up. I think $3 trillion of debt is added. And I think that the Fed is going to be lowering rates a little bit more aggressively than most people think. The odds are, I think they're projecting 3 rate cuts. I think we'll probably see at least 6 rate cuts. They're going to lower rates. The government's going to keep spending, and that is going to push inflation higher. And you might say, but Mark, I thought they're trying to fight inflation. Well, they are, but they have to choose between inflation and deflation, meaning asset prices crashing and the whole system falling apart, or you have to deal with more inflation. They're going to choose more inflation every time. So they'll lie about it. They'll change the way they calculate it. They'll change the numbers. As a matter of fact, in 2023, part of the reason why people were off is pretty much every report that the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, put out, instead of BLS, which is called BS, all the data they put out was, benefit of the doubt, it was wrong. It all got revised. So they'd publish it. And then a month later, they'd go, we're going to revise the data. It was wrong. They are either so incompetent they couldn't get the right data out, which is possible. But I think it was intentionally put out wrong to get the headlines. And then they changed it when nobody was paying attention. So they'll change the way the calculation is, which is actually part of the reason why I made that video in January. I said, hey, they've changed the way they've calculated CPI. This will give them the cover they need to pivot. So I predict $3 trillion of debt added. I predict more inflation. I predict at least 6 rate cuts by the Fed. And that will kick up inflation and that will keep the economy going. Now, what about the economy? Well, I predict that the economy will probably be pretty bumpy. I think we'll see the labor force stay pretty well intact. I think the wages will probably slow down. The wage growth has been pretty strong through 2003, which is what a lot of people missed. It's why the recession didn't happen. So I think we'll see the economy doing pretty well. As far as the war, it could be my, I don't know, could be my optimism. I am an optimist here. I want it to be, and I'm optimistic. I think the war sort of continues to be these types of skirmishes, and we stay in this perpetual war state. And again, maybe it's just my optimistic and my maybe my naivety. I don't see like this escalating to nuclear war, but I do see it continuing. I do see these skirmishes continuing. I do see this global, this centralization of this globalism continue to break apart, which means that shipping is going to be more expensive. We're going to continue to have skirmishes. We have to continue to reroute again around the Red Sea, reroute around the Panama Canal, you know, probably still dealing with Russia and China situation. And so these wars will continue to push deficit spending higher and will continue to push consumer price inflation higher because of increased costs, things like that, supply chains breaking down and things like that. What else do we predict? Well, let's see. I also think that when we look back to sort of assets and things like that, in the equities, let's start there. So stocks, equities, things like that. 2023 was a gangbuster year. It did really, really well, which is part of the reason why, well, you know, I don't want to say I told you so, but you know, part of the reason why I was continuing to stay in it, because I knew the Fed was easing. We saw it. We could see exactly what they were doing. And the problem is when you miss out on these types of moves, it can impact your portfolio sort of for the rest of your life. I mean, if you missed the best 10 days out of like the last, you know, 30, 40 years of the market, your returns basically went to zero. And we saw the market move up this year. Almost, you know, last year, 2023, moved up about 26%, the S&P 500 did. And that was a big impulse move. I don't think we're going to see another 26%. I think we'll see mostly volatility and sideways chop in the equity markets. Overall, the Magnificent Seven, if you will, the tech stocks, they're already starting to falter. And I don't think we'll see that big growth. I think this these wars and the supply chains will affect that. But in other parts of the market, I think it's going to do very well. As a matter of fact, in the real estate market, now I say all the time, markets are, there's no such thing as the market. There's thousands of markets broken down by size, type, location, et cetera. So for example, real estate in Austin, Texas has been very, very weak, but in some parts of Florida, like Tampa, it's held up very, very well. Seattle has been very bad, right? But even within that area, so I do have property outside of Austin, and some parts of Austin have done very, very bad, and some parts of Austin have actually done pretty well. So even within that market, there's differences there. But overall, I think real estate is going to outperform most people's expectations. And part of the reason why I believe that is I expect mortgage rates to drop probably into the fives. I think we'll get mortgage rates back into the fives. And what's going to happen is it's going to unleash a whole bunch of pent-up demand. As a matter of fact, I just had one of the most recognized names nationally for real estate on my show. And we talked about this exactly. If you'd like to hear that interview where we literally break down why it didn't crash and what he expects, it's all part of this 2024 thing I'm doing. If you want to go watch that interview and see what I think, go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. But I think we talked about that there's all this pent-up demand. Nobody was buying. And as soon as rates start dropping, they're going to go buy. So I think housing overall rebounds, not probably large multifamily commercial, but definitely in the residential space. Like I said, equities, probably some lackluster years, but I think there's some sectors of equities that are going to do very well. So for example, I think home stocks will do very well. I think those are going to rebound very well. Also, I'm very bullish this year on what the commodity sector is going to do. So commodity, that's energy, natural gas, oil. I think those rebound. Uranium, I think, is going to be a big year for uranium. We did very, very well in uranium, took some profits. I think we'll re-enter that. I think gold and silver is probably going to be a big year for gold and silver. And so those are commodities, but we can also play the equities. So we can buy the physical, I can buy physical gold, but then I can buy gold producers and miners, and so I can buy the equity. So in the equities of those commodities, I expect them to do well. So I'll be buying stocks around those energy, natural gas, oil, uranium, gold, physical things like that. For Bitcoin, I believe Bitcoin continues to escalate this year, continues to climb higher as we're going into this halving cycle. I think Bitcoin will probably go up by at least another 30 to 40% from where it's at today, just for the year. I think it will double probably in the next year and a half. Write that down. Fact check me on that. But of course, like I said, a lot of these commodities, energy, natural gas, uranium, gold, silver, and things like that, I think will do really, really well. Now, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show talking about my predictions for the markets and the economy in 2024. I'll be back with more and let you know exactly what I'm doing after a quick break. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this nine-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
All right, welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about why we didn't see the crash in the economy and the markets in 2023 and real estate in 2023 and what I think happens in 2024. Now, I've already thrown out a whole bunch of stuff. If you missed it, one, go back and listen to me on the podcast. Just search The Mark Moss Show in your favorite podcast player. Or if you want to get all the charts, the graphs, and the assets on buying, things like that, go to go.onemarkmoss.com, go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. All right, now let's just look real quick back. Why were all these analysts like Harry Dent Jr. wrong, calling for this 90% drop? What happened there? What about all these things that you've been hearing like, but Mark, the yield curve, what about the yield curve? The yield curve is 100% correct in forecasting these crashes. And don't you know that it's never been this inverted or hasn't been this inverted in decades? And don't you see it's uninverting? And shouldn't that cause a crash? Or you might say, but Mark, whenever the Fed pivots, it always causes a crash. And the Fed pivot's coming, so it should be crashing, right? Again, it's not the things that you don't know. It's the things that you absolutely know for certain. Now, again, you need to go back and watch this video that I made saying that warning, this time it's different. It's on my main YouTube channel, Mark Moss. And I broke down why this time is different, how the Fed and the central banks around the world are interacting in the markets differently. Now, first of all, let's just talk about the pivot. They say when the Fed pivots, markets have to crash, right? Well, what is the pivot? I guess it depends on how you define it. I would say the pivot is when I went from a easing cycle, then I went to a tightening cycle, which is what we've been in. And then I decide to get off of the tightening and go back to an easing. Instead of raising rates, I'm now lowering rates. for example. Instead of selling treasuries, I'm now buying treasuries, right? So I've pivoted my position. That's the pivot. Now, what happened historically is the Fed has been very reactionary. So in 2008, when we had the great financial crash, they saw the housing market start melting down like 30 months, over 2 years before anything was done. Bear Stearns went bankrupt, which sort of was the trigger for this entire collapse. A lot of people would pin it on that. It took them 7 months to get any type of a bailout together for the banks. And in that time, in that 7 months, the whole system melted down. Fast forward in 2023, when we had three banks collapse, Silicon Valley Bank, First Trust, I don't have them all written down, sorry. But we saw three banks collapse, which was bigger than the banks collapsing in 2008. The Fed interaction was only 6 days away. So in 2007, it took 7 months. And in that 7 months, the whole system melted down. In 2023, it was 6 days. And so you can see how different it is. And so back to this, when the Fed pivots. And so what happened is the Fed has been traditionally very slow to react. And so what happens is the Fed was raising rates, and then all of a sudden the markets and the economy started crashing, and the Fed waited, they waited. And then they finally said, oh shoot, we should do something. And so they pivot. But the problem is they pivoted way too late. And so it wasn't the pivot that caused the crash. They pivoted because the crash was already showing, and they did too little too late. And so what most people get wrong with that whole, when the pivot comes, the markets crash, is causality versus commonality, right? It didn't cause it. It just happened to be in common. But see, the way that they're interacting is different today. Now they're preemptively moving. They're preemptively acting. As a matter of fact, the Fed has gone around and opened up swap lines with all these different countries. So you don't even have to let us know if you get into a problem. You don't have to apply for credit. Here's a credit card right now. If you get into trouble, it's like what I do with my kids. Here's a credit card. If you get into trouble, you can use this. And so that's why I think this whole pivot thing causing a crash is a little bit outdated. They didn't understand the mechanism, supply and demand. Now, what about the yield curve? So the yield curve basically tells us that the way it should be is that shorter term money should be cheaper, longer term money should be more expensive. If I want to borrow money till tomorrow, you might give it to me for free. Hey, here's $20. Give me back tomorrow. If I wanted to borrow, if I wanted to borrow $1,000 for 5 years, you're probably going to want a return on that, right? So the longer that I want to borrow the money for, the more return you're going to want. That's the way it should work. That's just human nature. The yield curve inverting is when short-term money is more expensive than long-term money, which is kind of weird. Shouldn't work that way, which is exactly the anomaly that most people pick up on. So they say, this is a problem. The market has completely mispriced it. The short-term money should not be more expensive than short-term money. And so that is going to cause a crash. Now, again, commonality or causality, you have to understand this. Why would that happen? Well, so the thinking goes that, well, what's happening is there must be a massive crash and recession coming in the future that will then force the Fed to lower rates. So what they're doing by pricing future money cheaper, they're predicting that in the future, money will be cheaper. The Fed will have brought the price of it down. And why would they bring it down? Because something happened. But again, that's commonality, not causality. Okay. So right now we're not seeing that same metric. They're implying that the price of money will be cheaper in the future because there will be a crash that will then force the Fed to raise rates or lower rates. However, what we're seeing today is something completely different. The Fed is actually lowering rates and we're not having a crash. Remember, it's not the things that you don't know, it's the things you know for certain. So here we have, it's blowing everybody's minds. The Fed is lowering rates. Why would they do that? Why would they lower rates when we're not having a crash? All right. Now, those are a couple things. I just want to disprove those things. I believe deficit spending will continue to push markets higher. I believe that the war will continue to push the deficit spending. And I think in the election year, they're going to continue to keep printing. Now, in Q4 of 2024, things could change. We get past the election. And there's any number of things that could cause this to go haywire. So let me tell you things that you should be watching. Now, if you want to get this whole presentation with all my charts, my graphs, and more importantly, my indicators that I'm watching and the assets that I'm buying, you probably want to know all that. Go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. Again, that's go, www.onemarkmoss.com/2024. All right, now let's talk about that. So what could you lose if you don't do this, first of all? You can sit in cash all year, but if the market moves up another 10, 20, 30%, you're going to lose that. I think at least you're going to lose 10%. I think it, regardless of what the Fed and Treasury or BLS want to tell you, I think we're going to have at least 10% debasement. So you're going to lose at least 10% on your cash if you do nothing. Now, some people are saying the market could crash by 90%. So you might say, well, I could lose 90%, Mark. Yeah, but you could also use stop losses. So you could not lose 90% even if the market does. And as a matter of fact, if the market does drop 90%, we can put shorts on the market and we can actually make money on the way down. So you're not a tree. You can move. And this is part of the reason why I talk about like passive investing is dead right now. Now you have to be tactically managing your portfolio. All right, but what could you gain? Well, I think there's going to be several triple baggers that are happening. I think they're going to happen in the energy space. They're going to happen in the gold mining space, and they're going to happen in the crypto space. We're going to have multiple positions that go up by more than 100%. So you could miss out on those. What should you be watching? Well, I think the yield curve is broken. I wouldn't be paying a lot of attention to that. What I'd be paying attention to would be employment data. I want to look at weekly job claims. I want to look at them on a 4-week average. Because when people are working, it's pretty hard to have a recession. Two, I want to look at wage growth. If wages are going up, that means businesses are making money and people are working and they're spending money. I'm also going to look at the SEP. It's the Fed's Summary of Economic Projections. And that's basically the economy is where they're projecting the economy to either be slowing or growing. I want to look at PCE, Personal Consumption Index, that measures spending. And I want to keep an eye on Fed policy and their willingness to intervene in markets. If you want the full breakdown and what I'm doing about this, what I'm buying in this and actually these indicators, go to go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. go.onemarkmoss.com/2024. But that's my predictions. Continue war doesn't escalate. Increased government debt, $3 trillion at least this year. Pushes asset prices higher, specifically the ones I just mentioned. Overall equities, I'm not a big fan of, but I think around the commodity sector, it's going to be do very, very well. I think real estate bounces, but let me know what you think. Hit me up on social media at @onemarkmoss. Let me know what you think or leave it in the comments on the show. And that's what I got. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf-Edena. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.